Pardon me. So this evening, we have the first of our two pre-Pesach shiurim, and as is our practice, we'll begin with the matter of halacha, of inyanei hayom, and then we'll move into the matter of haggadah. So in terms of mitzvahs of Pesach, I wanted to speak this evening about the mitzvah of bedikas chametz. From a certain point of view, everyone knows about bedikas chametz. We know what to do. It is, in a sense, the first mitzvah of Pesach. It's page one of the Haggadah, bedikas chametz. One feels that when you strike the match and turn off the lights, and that's when Pesach begins, in a sense. It is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah midrabanan, to search the house for chametz. That said, the Gemara does associate it with psukim, which happens sometimes. It's a concept called asmachta. It's linked to certain psukim. And in fact, the links, there are four links in the chain that get us to bedikas chametz. The Gemara in Maseches Psachim and Daf Zayin Amud Beis, it makes the following chain of associations. It begins with the words, which of course are well known to us with regards to chametz, Shivas yamim se'or lo yimatze bivateichem. There shall be no chametz, or yeast, found in your houses. And therefore we're looking to avoid yimatze. And how does one reach a stage of finding? By searching, as it quotes from the pasuk in Parshas Miketz, searching for Binyamin's cup, vayichapes, bagadol hechel, uvakaton kila, vayimatze. So, vayimatze is the product of chipus, and therefore if a person wants to ensure that chametz isn't nimtza, he's got to search for it and make sure that he gets rid of whatever he finds, and then whatever he didn't find is not called nimtza. Moreover, as soon as we mention the concept of chipus, we then move to a pasuk in Tzefanya, which links searching to candles. Ba'esahi achapes es Yerushalayim baneiros, which tells us that a primary way of conducting a search, a good search, is with candles. And then the final pasuk is from Mishlei. Ner Hashem nishmas Adam, the candle of Hashem is a person's soul, chofes kol chadrei vatan, which searches out all the inner chambers of a person. And therefore, if we would summarize, because it's quite a journey, from vayimatze to vayichapes, to achapes baneiros, and the neiros becomes ner. Ner elokim nishmas adam. Again, these are psukim, but the Gemara itself says that this doesn't constitute a drosha in the sense that min haTorah one has to search by the light of the candle. Nonetheless, it's an asmachta, and an asmachta is also something. It represents, if one may say, a higher level derabanan, if it's linked to psukim, because it means the inspiration comes from the pasuk, even if it's not a full-fledged mitzvah on a Torah level. In terms of the question as to why do we search, why is it imperative on this mitzvah derabanan to search and destroy, to search for the chametz and to get rid of it from the house? The answer may seem rather simple, but actually it's a major dispute between the two great Rishonim, Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi states on the opening Mishnah of Psachim, which is of course about Bedikas Chametz, Rashi states the reason why one needs to search for and get rid of all the chametz is in order not to violate the prohibition of Bali Roy and Bali Matze. After all, one's not allowed to have chametz on the premises. If one, and you never know if you have chametz. That's why you've got to look and find it, and if you find, to get rid of it. So it's all in the interests of avoiding owning chametz and essentially fulfilling the mitzvah of destroying chametz. It sounds very simple. And yet, Tosfos are unhappy. And Tosfos raise what seems to be a very major objection. Namely, if you wish to avoid the problem called Bali Roy and Bali Matze on Pesach, we know you don't need to physically remove the chametz from your possession. It's enough to perform a procedure which is called bittul chametz, nullifying chametz. The Gemara says that fundamentally, once a person has nullified their chometz, they have no problems whatsoever in terms of bali roi, bali motzei. It could be that nullifying chometz is like making it hefker. It could be that it's its own form of destroying the chometz, at least mentally. However it works, one is completely in the clear as soon as one has performed bittul in terms of bali roi and bali motzei. And as we know, part of Bedikas Chometz is the bittul. The Gemara says, no sooner have you finished Bedika than Habodek Tzarech Sheyivatel. So one has to do something in addition to Bedika that can take care of Bali Roy, Bali Matze single-handedly, by itself. What then is the role for Bedikas Chometz? And that is why, says Tosfos, the requirement for Bedika is not rooted in the concern of avoiding having Chometz in your possession. Bittul can take care of that. Rather, even after one doesn't have the issue of Bali Roy and Bali Matze, there still remains a very severe prohibition not to eat chametz. And the Rabbanon were sensitive to having chametz on the premises on Pesach because throughout the year, people are very hamish with chametz. I mean, what's being Jewish about if not eating chametz? And this one week a year, perhaps a person may forget, and therefore we wish to be more sensitive and completely get rid of it from the premises. It's not about avoiding owning chametz or having it on the premises per se. It's about the worry that one may come to eat the chametz. So in a nutshell, for Rashi, the bedikas chametz is to avoid bali roi bali motze, having chametz in the possession. According to Tosfos, it's to avoid the possibility of coming to eat the chametz on Pesach. With regards to defending Rashi, briefly, after all, a question like that, bittul could take care of it single-handedly, why does one still need bedika? There are many explanations, but the classic defense of Rashi is to be found in the Ran. And the Ran states that the rabbis sought to avoid relying on bittul, and much preferred and much recommended the procedure of bedika, physically destroying it. The reason why is because bittul chometz is easier said than done. Or more correctly, it's easier said than meant. In order for the bittul to work, it has to be wholehearted. Well, is the person's heart always behind their nullification? They say, for me, my chometz is like the dust of the earth. That may be chometz that a person paid a lot of money for. It could be valuable. Difficult to, on a widespread basis, to rely on the fact that everyone, when they say my chometz is null and void, they'll mean it with a whole heart. But of course, if you search for it and you destroy it, it will be destroyed. Even if you ignited it with less than a full heart, the ashes will be the same. The Beis Halevi was famous for always making a point of having Shalshudas. He would stop what he was doing, and on Shabbos afternoon, someone said to him, you're the Rosh Hashiva of Elojin. There is an opinion that one could fulfill the mitzvah of Shalshudas with the Dvar Torah. So one could really, in a sense, you don't have to interrupt your learning, but you always do. So the Beis Halevi says, the reason why is because if I were to fulfill the mitzvah of Shalshudas with the Dvar Torah, I would say a chiddush, but if someone has a kasha on my chiddush, so then I've forfeited the mitzvah of Shalshudas because he undid my chiddush. But it's very difficult to undo a piece of herring, said the Beis Halevi. You can ask a kasha, it's still there. And similarly, bittul, one can say bittul, but his heart might not be in it. If you get rid of your chametz, it's gotten rid of. Even if your heart wasn't in it, you're fine. And that is why the Chachamim said the way to deal with chametz is not through bittul, which is harder to quantify, but rather through bedika and biur, searching and destroying. Now, the time, of course, the Mishnah tells us in the opening line everything we need to know. Or la'arba'a asar bod kenes chametz le'or haner. The famous or la'arba'a asar, that's where the practice comes from, that the evening before a certain date is called or le. Or la arba asa, the night before the 14th of Nisan, one checks the chametz and it's got to be leor haner. Through the light of a candle, that's considered optimum time, the optimum way to fulfill the search. The Gemara, interestingly, states emphatically, quotes a brisa actually, that when we say that one should check through the light of a candle, it has to be by the light of a candle specifically and not through the light of what's called an avuka, a torch, a multi-wicked candle. And that's very interesting because normally when one needs light, a torch is always considered to be better than a single candle. For Havdalah, one goes in search of a torch, an avuka. It's considered optimum because the more the merrier, the more light there is, the better. However, when it comes to Bedikas Chometz, a torch is invalid. A multi-wick candle is invalid. It has to be a single wick. And the Gemara gives no less than 4 reasons why a torch is no good. It's got to be a candle. The first reason, says the Gemara, is because one needs to check in all the nooks and crannies. One needs to be able to hold up the, to be able to maneuver the candle. It's much easier to maneuver a candle, harder to maneuver a torch. One couldn't really place it in a way, in a more that surgical way, to be able to see in all of those cracks and nooks and crannies. That's the first point. Secondly, says the Gemara, the size and the strength, the glow of a torch, because it's so bright, sometimes it actually stops a person from seeing in front of it because it can dazzle a person. One tries to hold up the torch. If you're looking in a room, it will provide illumination. But if you're looking somewhere specific and there's just the torch in between you and that place, it can actually almost blind you. And therefore, it will not aid the search. It can perhaps only hinder the search. Thirdly, says the Gemara, a person when searching for chometz needs to be focused on the search. They can't be distracted. And the Gemara says, if you're carrying a torch around your house, moving it this way and that way, your mind will not be on burning chometz. It will be on avoiding burning your house. And therefore, a person won't be able to have to be settled. A single candle, it's easier to handle. You don't have that worry. You can focus on the search. Biasusa, what's called, fear. A person will be distracted. On the back of his mind, he's always worried, is the flame going to jump? And the flame is too big. That's why a candle. And finally, says the Gemara, it's the nature of a candle, as we know from Abdullah candle, if it's multi-wick, it jumps around, and therefore the light keeps on moving this way and that way. A single wick has, the light is steady and allows a person to have a steady search. And these, as we said, are thus the no less than the 4 reasons why a torch is not acceptable, it's disqualified, it has to be a single-wicked candle. This a section of the Gemara actually forms the background for a halachic discussion which took place over the last 100 years or so, namely whether or not one can use an electric light, an electric lamp or torch in order to search for chometz. And the Poskim discussed all the various possibilities. The consensus of Poskim seems to be that an electric torch is entirely acceptable, assuming that it's small enough that it doesn't have the problems of either dazzling and it is maneuverable, because if it's a handheld torch, one can maneuver it in the way that one could a single candle, perhaps even better. And it won't blind if it's not one of those industrial strength torches, and the light is steady and there is no fear. And therefore, Shlomo Zalman Orbach and others say it's acceptable in lechatchila for a person to use an electric torch. Many people have a sense of tradition. It's not the same without the candle, and therefore they'll light with the candle, but it's mutter mitzad halacha to use an electric flashlight. It's very interesting just to, in terms of the hishtalshilas hadvarim, to track the discussion. Originally, there was resistance to using electric light, but it's more a function of the way electric lights used to be, because initially they were not handheld, they were plugged into the wall, and moreover, the nature of the plugs was very volatile. They were not the wires were not insulated. Very often, electric light, there were sparks could go anywhere, and wires were often exposed, and just in those early days, and therefore, Poskim at that time felt that it had the fear factor. A person wouldn't be comfortable and with their mind at ease moving the lamp this way and that way because they're always worried, am I moving it too close to something? Will it set something on fire in terms of the wires? That, of course, has changed. Not only are the wires insulated, but these devices are now handheld and there's no issue with that at all. Before the bedika, as we know, we make a bracha. But the bracha is Al biur chometz. So that's interesting. It's not al bedikas chometz as much as it's a mitzvah. It's al biur chometz. And the Ran explains that actually what this represents is the fact that the search for the chametz is the first stage in the mitzvah of destroying chametz. So search and destroy are actually two parts of the mitzvah. And one makes the bracha at the beginning, at stage one of the mitzvah, which is the bedika. But the mitzvah is to destroy, which will be fulfilled in the fullness of time. And therefore one makes the bracha before commencing the mitzvah, but the wording of the bracha is about the actual mitzvah, the final stage, which is the destruction of the chametz. And there's something of a chiddush here, more than one point actually. Firstly, this tells us that the bedika, we may have been inclined to look at the bedika, the search, as not yet the mitzvah of destroying chametz. The mitzvah of destroying is when you destroy it, when you burn it. Searching for it is a preparatory stage, not the first stage of the mitzvah. It's a preparatory stage for the mitzvah, what is known in the halachic parlance as a hechsher mitzvah, allowing one to get ready for the mitzvah, much as baking a matzah is not yet the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to eat the matzah. So baking the matzah is the hechsher mitzvah. Getting the chametz, looking for it and finding it and collecting it, one would have thought perhaps that that is like baking the matzah, which one could then destroy. And therefore, the first point of chiddush is that actually, no, the Rabbanan instituted the search as the beginning of the mitzvah of biur, stage one of the mitzvah. The second point of chiddush is that between the beginning of the mitzvah and the end, normally what we like to avoid hefsek, interruptions. One doesn't like to have too much time between the beginning and the end. Here, between the beginning, and what constitutes hefsek? Speaking, being distracted. In terms of biur chametz, between stage one of bedika and stage two of burning, you have actually many hours during which the person goes to sleep. And it's very interesting that when he wakes up the next morning, he picks up on the mitzvah, and under other circumstances, this would definitely have qualified as a hefsek. One would perhaps say, well, make the bracha again, or delay the bracha till this later stage. But we don't. We rely on the bracha made the night before, even though he's been asleep for a number of hours, he wakes up and he continues as if nothing happened. That's also a chiddush. But in a sense, the biggest chiddush is, as much as we say that one is you're beginning to fulfill the mitzvah to destroy chametz, well, that remains to be seen. It depends whether you find any. In other words, if you knew there was chametz there, and it's a question of going after it, so one can say, I'm on my way to begin the mitzvah. But the whole point of bedika is, you don't know whether there's chametz. You have to check to see. And therefore, to make a bracha al biur chametz, as if to say, I am now commencing the mitzvah of bedika. Well, maybe you are, but maybe you're not. Depends on whether you find. And therefore, the chiddush here is that the search itself, regardless of whether you find, the Rabbanon conferred upon the search a definite status of an act of mitzvah. The Torah mitzvah of destroying chametz begins with the Rabbanon mitzvah of searching for it. And that search is a definite fulfillment of a mitzvah, which constitutes the beginning of biur, even if you don't find it. The truth is that this was represented the origins of the minhag, which is well known to us, and it's mentioned by Rishonim. The Kolbo and others mention that there are those who have a minhag that they put bread in the house. They spread bread around the house before the bedika. Why? Because they're worried that they may not find any chametz, and therefore they made a bracha, but it wasn't validated. So they put chametz down to be sure that they will definitely find chametz. That's a minhag that's quoted by Rishonim. However, the Kolbo says, and this is also the position of the Ramah, strictly speaking, one does not need to do this. And the reason is, as we said above, because the search itself is the mitzvah, regardless of whether or not one finds. And thus, one doesn't have to worry that the bracha is a bracha levatala. Even if you didn't find chametz, you fulfilled the mitzvah of searching for chametz. That is a definite mitzvah. So in pure halachic terms, says the Ramah, one doesn't need it, but the minhag is to do it, and it's a very widespread minhag, and it's certainly not a bad thing at all. In fact, in later generations, in more recent times, this discussion resurfaced. And the reason why, as mentioned by the Mishnah Brura, The nature of B'dikas Chametz has changed over time. And the reason why that is because it used to be that cleaning the house for Chametz used to begin with B'dikas Chametz. If you can imagine such a scenario, the Pesach cleaning began the night before Pesach because people didn't really have that much to clean. It's possible to conduct a B'dikas Chametz in some of their domiciles almost without moving. One just needs to turn around and you've checked the entire house. There was relatively little to check, and the B'dika was the beginning of seeing whether there's Chametz in the house. That is not true anymore. Pesach, the only thing that stops Pesach not starting earlier than it does is Purim, because it's unavoidable. But nonetheless, the Mishnah Brura already notes that the minhag in his time was that the house was scoured before B'dikas Chametz. So this changes, in a sense, what then is one looking for when one checks for Chametz? It's very unlikely that we'll find Chametz. In fact, one could almost say if the husband is conducting B'dikas Chametz and he finds Chametz, he should probably make sure that his wife isn't looking. Because woe to him that there's still a piece of Chametz to be found by the time of B'dikas Chametz. He'll be eating karpas until further notice. So, says the Mishnah Brura, once that's true, so what used to be less required to put down Chametz, because the search itself is the mitzvah. But that was when there was an active likelihood that one would actually find Chametz. But now that it's virtually impossible that one will find Chametz, really, if one's cleaned the house properly, so it takes the oomph out of the search, which means the minhag of putting bread down now becomes much more compelling as a halakhic concern. So says the Mishnah Brura. That said, amazingly, Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach remains firm on this point and states that even though the minhag is now to clean the house very thoroughly before B'dikas Chometz, nonetheless one doesn't need to put down bread on a strictly halachic basis before B'dikas Chometz. And the reason why is because B'dika, says Reb Shlomo Zalman, means to check. One is checking whether there's Chometz. There's always room to check. Meaning, it's not so. It really depends how one defines B'dika. If it's a pure search, so you're searching, but you know there's nothing there. But it's not just about the search, says Reb Shlomo Zalman. It's about the check. So if you hadn't cleaned the house, you'd be checking to see, is there any Chametz? And if you have cleaned the house, you're checking to see whether the house was cleaned right. And whether maybe something's happened in the interim, because things can always happen. So it's more of an inspection. But that is the mitzvah of B'dika. And therefore, Reb Shlomo Zalman insists that, although, once again, the widespread minhag is yes to put down the Chametz, one should, of course, take careful note of where the Chametz is. It doesn't want to surface at some point during Seder night, but nonetheless, it remains a minhag on a strict halachic basis, as of Shlomo Zalman. The mitzvah of B'dika stays that, a mitzvah of B'dika. It's interesting to note, from the other side, the minhag of putting down bread met with opposition by some poskim, because they claimed that if the only thing that's saving you from, shall we say, a bracha levatala, is that now you'll find bread, it's true, but you know where it is. So there's no search. And I don't know that it's true that it has to be dafka someone else who puts it down so that the searcher doesn't find it. If a person is living by themselves and they wish to fulfill this practice, this minhag of putting down bread, so we call it a search, but they know exactly where it is. So the actual chametz, they're not sure if there is anymore. There probably isn't. And the bread that they put down, it's hardly a search. It's a formality because they know where it is. So it didn't help them in terms of the b'dika. But the answer to that is twofold. Number one, the bracha is al bir chametz, which means even if you know where the chametz is, it's still a prelude to destroying it when you pick it up. But there's a second fascinating point, which is to be found in the writings of the Chabina Rav in the Dovev Mishorim. And he says that Let us remind ourselves as to the chain of psukim that led us to B'dikas Chametz. It began with Shivas Yomim Se'or Lo Yimatzi Bevateichem, not to have chametz on the premises. Then we learned that one finds chametz through checking. Chippus. Where did that come from? To that end, we quoted the pasuk in Miketz, where they search for the cup of Binyamin, Vayichapes, Bagadol Heichel, Uvakaton Kila, Vayimatzei HaGavia Vamtachas Binyamin. The Gavia was found. Says the Chibina Rav, who found it? The one who hid it. It was Yosef's attendant who put it in Binyamin's bag. He knew where it was. Which means, actually, his search for Binyamin's cup is exactly analogous to our search for the chametz when we know where it is. But nonetheless, it's been put down. When one goes down to collect it, one needs not to worry that that doesn't qualify as chippus. That's a fascinating ha'ara from the, if you go back to the psukim themselves. After the bedika, one performs the bittul, just as a final precaution, just in case one missed something which may surface on chametz. At that point, it's perfectly acceptable to perform the bittul. All of the chametz, and this is an important point, which is sometimes perhaps can fall by the wayside, all of the chametz, either the chametz that one found during the search, or the chametz that one has set aside for use yet for tomorrow morning, etc. and so forth, should be put in a safe place, out of reach of anyone that could spread it around. That the Mishnah says, Umashe Mishayer Yinichenu Betzina. Whatever's left over till tomorrow, put it away in a safe place. Because if you don't, well, the Mishnah says, if a weasel comes along and moves it around, spreads it around, your entire bedika will be undone. You will have to check the entire house again. Who knows where it will be? Now, we live in a weasel-free zone. But the poskim say, instead of weasel, insert children, especially young children. And in fact, young children are worse than weasels. Because at least an animal has a certain method in terms of where he might store it. Young children have no such method. It really, literally could be anywhere. And therefore, this is important if a person wishes to preserve the integrity of the search and there are young children around who could potentially reach up onto the table and then disperse the chametz around. It should be out of harm's way. A final point, as much as the primary reasoning for bedikas chametz is, as we said, when we'll conclude the way we began, for Rashi it's to avoid having chametz on the premises. There's no argument with physically removing it from the premises. That's the best way. For Tosis, one shouldn't come to eat it. But there does seem to be an additional theme about bedikas chametz, and one feels it. Namely, in addition to all of this, the bedika engenders a certain sensitivity, a certain alertness to chametz. It brings chametz very much into a person's consciousness. If you're searching the house the way that it's done to get rid of chametz, it means that you are on the alert for chametz, and that is a general value. And the way that it comes out, and it's again a well-known halacha, very important, is that if a person is leaving home within 30 days of Pesach, he needs to do bedika before he leaves, even if he's not planning on coming back on Pesach. So there is no worry that he may come to eat the chametz because he won't be anywhere near the premises. He could be overseas. Nonetheless, within 30 days, he's got to do bedika. And amazingly, the source for this requirement, says the Gemara in Psachim, is the halacha of Sho'alim V'dorshim Be'inyono Shachag Shloshim Yom Kodem Achag. There's a mitzvah to begin to learn the halachas of the Chag for 30 days beforehand. On Purim, people begin to learn the halachas of Pesach. That's the source of the obligation of bedikas chametz, which is astounding. We never find that the obligation to learn the halachas of the Chag translates into already fulfilling the mitzvahs of the Chag. We've never heard that from 30 days before Sukkot, one already needs to buy an esrog. Not so. Or build a sukkah. Not so. But when it comes to bedikas chametz, it does translate into bedikas chametz, because the search of the chametz also has a lot of affinity with learning the halachas of the Chag. It's to get one ready, it's to bring one into a consciousness of alertness for chametz, and that's also an aspect of bedikas chametz. So these are some of the highlights of this, one would say, special mitzvah. It's the, as we said, the opening mitzvah. And these are some of the major discussions, of course. For all of them, there are many details. And from here, let us come to discuss matters of the Haggadah. And we begin with a general discussion. For it's important to know, and we do know, that the Haggadah is actually a mitzvah of the 613 mitzvahs. Of the many mitzvahs of the evening for us on Seder night, two of them are d'oraisa, and the rest are d'rabbanan. The two that are on a Torah level is the first kazayas of matzah, and the mitzvah to tell the story of leaving Mitzrayim. It shouldn't be overlooked, the fact that it's actually a mitzvah from the Torah. And so much so, and it's codified by the overwhelming majority of Moni HaMitzvahs as one of the 613, which actually breeds an interesting shaila. Because as a mitzvah, one would have expected that it should be preceded with a bracha. That's the most natural thing in the world. It should have been something like Asher Kodeshanu Mitzvot V'Tzivanu Al Mitzvah Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, or however one would phrase it, as one of the mitzvahs. And this now becomes the question, why is there no mitzvah on Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? And this question is dealt with by Rishonim and continues to Achronim, really until our time. But to begin with one of the Rishonim, and it's a school of thought, really, Rabbeinu Peretz, one of the great Rishonim, states very simply, the reason why we do not make a bracha on the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is because actually, on its most basic level, a person has already fulfilled the mitzvah before he even recites the Haggadah. Because he's already mentioned Yetzias Mitzrayim in Kiddush. Zeich Yetzias Mitzrayim. So the lowest common denominator of the mitzvah has already been fulfilled. From this point onwards, as we know, Kol Hamar Beharizei Meshubach, but one doesn't fulfill the mitzvah when it's already happened. Now, this response of Rabbeinu Peretz has drawn a great deal of discussion from Acharonim. Because to say that the mitzvah of Seder night can be fulfilled with the three words Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim needs to be examined. After all, we know that there are certain ways to fulfill the mitzvah, which we find in the Mishnah, Maschilim Bignus. One needs to tell the whole story to begin with the negative, end with the positive. One has to tell the story, not just to mention the fact that we left. In fact, according to many Mefarshim, this is exactly what sets aside the mitzvah on Seder night to the mitzvah on every night. Let's not forget, there's a mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim every night. We talk about it in the Haggadah, Kol Yimei Chayecha, the Rabbis Halelos. So if there's a mitzvah to talk about it every night, and then come Seder night and we say there's a mitzvah to talk about it, so if we may borrow the expression, Manishtana Halayla Zemi Kol Halelos, how is it different? Yesterday there's also a mitzvah, and tomorrow night there'll also be a mitzvah. So what's unique about the mitzvah on Seder night? The answer is, throughout the year one needs to mention it, which we do. In Shema, etc. But tonight, the mitzvah is more than to mention it, but to tell the story. In fact, according to the Aruch HaShulchan in his Perush Leil Shimurim, this is exactly why the Haggadah brings in the early stages, the famous discussion of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and the Chachamim. What do we learn from Kol Yimei Chayecha? To mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night? Or not? Maybe Yemos HaMashiach, whatever it may be. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, why is this in the Haggadah? I mean, this is about this is about every night. But tonight is something else, something unique. So why are we mentioning the discussion of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim every night? And the answer, says Aruch HaShulchan, is in order to compel the point that it can't be that the mitzvah tonight is just to mention it, because as we see from this discussion, that's true every night. So it must be, perforce, that if every night there's a mitzvah to talk about it, to mention it, tonight the mitzvah must be to more than mention it. And this now becomes a question on Rabbeinu Peretz, who states that one fulfilled the mitzvah of Haggadah with the word Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim on Kiddush. Moreover, we know towards the end of Maggid, Rabbi Gamliel says, it's from the Mishnah in Arvei Pesachim, if a person didn't talk about the three things, Pesach, Matzah, and Moro, Lo Yotza Yedei Chovoso. Now, there's a lot of discussion as to on what level he hasn't fulfilled Yedei Chavoso, but on whatever level it is, it's without a doubt an integral part of the mitzvah, an important part of the mitzvah. He hasn't spoken about any of those things when he said Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim in Kiddush. Not about Pesach, not about Matzah, not about Maror. So it seems that there's a lot to the mitzvah that one hasn't yet done, in which case the question one could say, returns, why then do we not make a bracha before fulfilling this mitzvah? The Ma'ase Nisim, which is the Rabbi Yaakov Milisa, the Nesivos, in his Haggadah Ma'ase Nisim, he gives a very interesting answer, and it will actually touch on an important discussion, which is not so well known. As a rule, we recite brachas on mitzvahs, indeed. Sometimes, however, the mitzvah itself has the form of a bracha. For example, Birchas HaMazon, benching. It's a mitzvah from the Torah, but it has the form of a bracha. We may have noticed that we never make a bracha before benching. What would that sound like? Well, it's a mitzvah, Sheikh Adishanim, so it's a tzivanu al Birchas HaMazon. There is no such bracha. And the reason why is because it's not appropriate. If the mitzvah itself has the form of a bracha, one doesn't make a bracha on a bracha. How does this relate to us? The mitzvah of Magid ends with a bracha. Hashem Go'alanu, Go'al Yisrael, just before the second cup. And it's interesting to note, if we move to the side just for a moment, there is a discussion amongst the Rishonim as to what is the nature of the bracha of Asher Go'alanu. What is it? There are two possibilities. It's possible that this bracha is part of the mitzvah, which would make it, shall we say, like Kiddush on Friday night, which begins with Psukim but ends with a bracha, Mekadesh HaShabbos. And it could be that Magid is similar. It begins with a story and ends with a bracha, Asher Go'alanu. So that actually that bracha is the culmination of the mitzvah. The mitzvah ends with the bracha. And that's the opinion of the Rashbam. Others, however, the Ritva explains that the bracha of Asher Ga'alanu isn't the end of the mitzvah. It's a bracha that one makes after the mitzvah. The mitzvah of Magid is concluded when one finished telling the story, one finished saying the first part of Halah. Once one has concluded the mitzvah, one then makes a bracha, similar to the bracha of Yehalelucha. Halal also ends with a bracha. But the concluding bracha of Yehalelucha isn't the end of Halal, it's a post-mitzvah bracha. And that now is a very interesting question. The bracha before the second cup, Asher Ga'alanu, is it a post-Magid bracha, or is this the end of Magid? Well, on that, opinion is divided in Rishonim. But the Ma'ase Nisim clearly understands, like the Rashbam, that it represents the end of Magid. Because it represents the end of Magid, that's why one doesn't make a bracha before the mitzvah, because one doesn't make a bracha on the mitzvah when the mitzvah itself has the form of a bracha. So that's his famous response to this question. The Sfasemes yet has a third approach. We find in Rishonim and Acharonim, Rabbeinu Bachya and Parshas Shelach, and the Aruch HaShulchan, that although the rule is that we make a bracha before performing mitzvahs, but there's a certain type of mitzvah that we don't make a bracha on. And that's what he calls a mitzvah sichlis, a mitzvah whose performance would be intuited by human intellect. We should note, by the way, for example, almost all mitzvahs ben Adam l'chaveiro are not preceded by a bracha. It's very interesting. Not stokah, and not anything. All that entire category of mitzvahs, which includes many mitzvahs, of course, and before none of them do we recite a bracha. And the Aruch HaShulchan explains the reason why is because a mitzvah bin adam l'chaveiro, that's a person who has a healthy moral sense, will intuit that that's the way a person should behave. The nusach of Asher Kiddushanu b'mitzvose v'tzivanu represents or introduces a type of mitzvah whose fulfillment begins beyond what a person themselves may intuit. That's when we make the bracha, Asher Kiddushanu. Largely ben adam l'makom, almost never ben adam l'chaveiro for that reason. Now the Gemara in Psachim and Dav Kuftes Vav tells of an interesting incident. Rav Nachman, he asked on Seder night, he asked his Eved, Doru was his name. Doru comes up every once in a while in the Shas. And he always has something very interesting to say. And Rav Nachman asked Doru, what would you do if What should a servant do if his master set him free? I don't know if he asked Dora what he would do, because maybe Dora thought he was about to be set free. But what would an Eved do if his master set him free? So Dora said, well, he should heap praises upon his master for setting him free. And Rav Nachman said, you have inaugurated our Seder. You have set the tone for our Seder. And he began the Seder in that way. Says the Sfas Emes, what does this tell us? The telling of the story with the theme of praise and thanksgiving that has on Seder night, that's something that even Doru, right, wasn't Jewish, and he had a healthy moral sense of how a person should act. He intuited that that's the way that a person should respond on an occasion like that. And therefore, says Sfas Emes, the mitzvah of telling the story and celebrating and thanking Hashem for taking us out of Egypt on the anniversary of the night that we came out is the mitzvah sichlis, and therefore it doesn't get a bracha. And that's a very interesting orientation towards the mitzvah of HaKadosh. So in order to see the atmosphere of the mitzvah of the story, the absence of the bracha beforehand should give us that insight into the nature of the moral nature of what the mitzvah is about. So these are some of the answers to the question, classic responses as to why there's no bracha for Maggid. There's plenty more, ki rabim heim, but we will proceed to the beginning of Maggid itself, which of course is holach ma'anyu. That's how we begin. And we'll preface with some well-known questions. That they're the questions that need to be asked about holach ma'anyu. Firstly, it's in Aramaic, not like anything else in the Haggadah. Why would that be? And the classic response to this question is that it used to be, in the times when the Haggadah was formulated, people actually spoke Aramaic better than they spoke Hebrew, if one could imagine such a thing. And therefore, in order to ensure that everyone understood, even the unlettered and even people that were not bilingual and they only spoke the Mama Lashon of Aramaic, so they wanted to be sure that everyone understood, and therefore they said it in that language. The problem is, if that is true, then, and the goal is, and it is true, that the Haggadah needs to be understood by everyone. In fact, one of the Balei HaTosfos who lived in London, the word Tosfos in England, Tosfos Chachmei Anglia, and the most famous among them, I think, is Rabbeinu Eliyahu Milondon. And he's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch as being the one who would tell over the Haggadah in English to his family on Seder night, because it's imperative that everybody understands. It is quite true. But if that's the case, then holach ma'anyo, it's not a pillar of Maggid. As we mentioned before, there are many sections of Maggid which are much more critical. They are the ones that should be in Aramaic. Rabbi Gamliel's three discussions, Pesach, Matzah, and Moro. So the whole thing should be in Aramaic, or at least those critical points, which of course they're not. And moreover, if the value is to understand, it's very difficult to see why it would still be in Aramaic. Because now one needs to a two-stage process to get it into English, maybe to translate it into Hebrew and from there and into English. So it's not helping anyone anymore for it to be in Aramaic. It should really be in English, which it isn't. So what about that? Secondly, after we, in the second sentence, we say halach ma'anya, diachol avasana. We clearly mean to say something very important. This is the beginning of the Seder. We then go on to say, kodich ben yeseh v'yechol. This is a very puzzling sentence. Anyone who's hungry, let them come and eat. I wonder if in the history of the entire Jewish people, if anyone ever accepted this invitation. Because how could they? The family has already gone home, shut the door, and made kiddush. And this is the point they say, kodich ben yeseh v'yechol. They would probably be very alarmed if someone accepted the invitation. He would have to have what would he say? I couldn't help but strain to overhear your very kind invitation. So here I am. A real invitation would be issued in shul, which they are. Yisrael Kadoshim Haim, even till this day, people make sure before they leave, everyone has a place for the Seder, and well before then. So what is the meaning, therefore? It's an empty invitation. What is it, sir? We say, Kol dichven yeseh v'yechol, kol ditzrich yeseh v'yifsach. Anyone who's hungry, let him come and eat. Anyone who's needy, let him partake of the of Pesach with us. That seems to be two ways of saying the same thing, somewhat doubled over. What's the meaning of those two expressions? And finally, the third sentence of Halach Ma'anya, Hoshata Hocha, Lashana Baba Arad Yisrael, this year here, next year in Israel, this year slaves, next year free men. Halach Ma'anya moves very quickly. Within the space of about 30 seconds, we've gone through a discourse on the matzah, invitation to the needy, and Lashana Baba Yerushalayim. It's almost, that sounds like it's finished. How do these three go together? The Shibale HaLeket, one of the Rishonim, explains that Halach Ma'anya is based on a comment of the Medrash. It's a Medrash Eicha Rabasi, commenting on the Pasuk in Eicha, Golsa Yehuda Me'oni. It's in the very beginning, it's the third Pasuk of Eicha. Golsa Yehuda Me'oni. Yehuda was exiled through poverty, through oppression, on account of oppression. What is the meaning of this? Says the Medrash, one of the primary contributing causes to the galus of the in the first Beis HaMikdash was that people did not celebrate Pesach correctly. They didn't appreciate Pesach. Golsa Yehuda me'oni, milechem oni. They were not particularly sufficiently careful, not about matzah and not about chametz. And presumably, the message of chametz and matzah, which we will yet need to discuss, but it is exceedingly stringent. In the Torah, if a person eats chametz, it's a very severe penalty. It's chayav kares. And that marks our initial redemption, to be lax in observing correctly in matters of chametz and matzah compromises the redemptive state and precipitated to a degree was a factor that led to the galus. Galus Yehuda me'oni. This, I think, explains to us why in the Jewish consciousness there is such a hypersensitivity to chametz. It's not a speck, not a crumb, and so it should be. The Vilna Gaon, as was his way, who maintained that everything that is mentioned in the words of Chazal is alluded to somewhere in the Torah itself. Leke mida de la remiza be'oraisa. Where do we find an allusion to this idea that not being sufficiently careful with matters of chametz and matzah can actually lead to galus? Well, says the Gaon, and we've seen this on a number of occasions, the Tame HaMikra, the cantillation, the trop, that accompany the words in the Pasuk, they're not only to tell the Baal Kori how to sing the words, they also have an element of, an aspect of commentary. They add insight into the words. The Torah says if a person eats chametz on Pesach, v'nichrasa hanefeshahi, that soul will be cut off. The word v'nichrasa, says the Gaon, as a rule, is always accompanied, if you note, with the tevir. It always has that downward sloping tevir. And tevir actually means broken, because the connection has been broken. That's what Kares is. An exception to the rule is this pasuk. For when it says that if a person eats chametz on Pesach v'nichrasa, the tam is not a tevir, but it's the two lines on top, which are called gershayim. Gershayim, says the Gaon, is rooted in the word gerush, which means expulsion. That's the remez in the Torah, that one emanation of the punishment for not being careful enough with chametz and matzah is gerush, or as the Medrash says, golsa yehuda me'oni. So that's the comment of the Vilna Gaon. It turns out that chametz and matzah are very significant factors in terms of our state of galus and geula. And that's why we begin, actually, by saying, Holach ma'anya di'achola v'sona de'ar Mitzrayim. This is the matzah that we ate. We ate matzah before we left Mitzrayim, which is interesting. The first mitzvah, the first time we ate matzah was before we left. So on the one hand, it's commemorative, but we did eat matzah before we left. And that actually allowed us to be redeemed, to practice the mitzvah of being careful in matters of chametz and matzah. So halach ma'anya, this is the lechem oni that our forefathers ate when in Eretz Mitzrayim, and that's how they left, because in the merit of this they left. But then subsequently, they were lax in these matters, and that's why they went back into galus. That's why halach ma'anya is in Aramaic. It's not to facilitate understanding. It's Aramaic is the language of Golos. Our first national Golos after entering Eretz Yisrael was to go to Bavel. And therefore Aramaic represents for us Golos. And Halach Ma'anyo is saying, over this we went to Bavel. And we remember things the way they should be. Kol dich ben yeseh v'yechal. What is this? Mefarshim say, this is an aspect of Zecher LeMikdash. For this is what people used to say on the evening, on the afternoon, as they were getting ready to shech the korban Pesach. They would say, "Kol dich ben yeseh v'yechal, kol ditzrich yeseh v'yivsach." We remember things how they used to be. That's also part of it. Zecher LeMikdash. Reb Velva Soloveitchik comments on the double expression, "Kol dich ben yeseh v'yechal, kol ditzrich yeseh v'yivsach." Anyone who's hungry, anyone who needs. What is the meaning of these two expressions? Well, in typical halachic style, says Reb Velva, the halacha with regards to Korban Pesach is that it ideally should be eaten when a person has already eaten other foods, and this is the final thing that satisfies, what's called al hasova. If a person only has a bit of Korban Pesach, it shouldn't be the first thing they eat when they're hungry, but rather they should first satisfy their appetite, their hunger, and then when they're still yet, they could have just a little more, the final thing they eat is the korban, Pesach, and then in Matir Nachra Pesach, Afikoman. And thus we say, kol dichbin, anyone who's hungry, yeseh v'yechol, let him come and eat, meaning he should eat other things, not yet the korban Pesach. Kol ditzrich, if he then needs just one more thing, then yeseh v'yifsach, let him come and eat the korban Pesach. So that's the halachic balance in those two things. And as we said, it's so important to lay correct emphasis, sufficient emphasis, on matters of chametz and matzah, and in the reward for doing so, we look forward to geula. This should be another step on the way to geula. Hashata hocha l'shona b'ba'ar di Yisrael. In the merit, amongst other things, of taking sufficient care in matters of chametz and matzah. Now, a famous episode that is mentioned a couple of paragraphs time into the Haggadah is the Maisa with Rabbi Eliezer, all those rabbis, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer ben Azar, and they were all there and they were talking and discussing until the Talmidim came and said, "Higias man Kriyas Shema Shel Shacharis." The Stipler Gaon has a fascinating observation, namely, if they were discussing the mitzvah of Sipritias Mitzrayim, they were discussing the story the whole night. Well, apparently that means that they subscribe to the understanding that the mitzvah applies the whole night. That's not so straightforward. The mitzvah of the Haggadah is bound to the time of matzah. Bavozeh lo amarti, ela b'shoshish matzah umar menachon lefanecha. The mitzvah of matzah itself is bound to the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. Amatzah sumer miyocheluhu. If one wants to know what is the time frame for the mitzvah of Haggadah, you need to know when may eat the Korban Pesach. And that is a machlokas. And it's actually a machlokas between the rabbis who were at this Seder. Some say the mitzvah of Korban Pesach is the whole night. If it's the whole night, then Pesach is the whole night, matzah is the whole night, the story is the whole night. And we understand, they were all telling the story the whole night. But if Pesach is until Chatzos, and matzahs until Chatzos, as we know, we try and have the Afikoman before Chatzos, Pesach is Chatzos, matzah. So the Haggadah is before Chatzos. So the shaila is two of the rabbis here, specifically Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, they are of the opinion that the Korban Pesach is only eaten until Chatzos, so says the Gemara in Maseches Brachos and Daf Tes. So the shaila is, so what are they doing at the Seder, past Chatzos? They should have gone, and they should have other things to do. But they're still there, all there. Says the Stipler, very simply. Where did the Seder take place? They were Mesubim b'Bnei Brak. B'Nei Brak was the town where Rabbi Akiva was the Rav. And Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that the Korban Pesach is eaten the entire night. And they were guests at his table. And therefore, when in Bnei Brak, when in Rabbi Akiva's town, you do as Rabbi Akiva. If they were home, they'd be finished by Chatzot. But they're not home. They're guests in someone else's house. He is of the opinion that the mitzvah is the whole night. Because they stay with their chaverim, they discuss the story. For them, it's not the mitzvah of Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's probably the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. But in his house, he's the one that dictates for him. Just a final comment, which is, I think, a major in terms of the atmosphere of the evening. The Tamidim come in. That's how the story concludes. They're telling the story until the Tamidim come in and said, Rabbo Seinu, Higiyaz Man Kriya Shema Shel Shacharis. And the Shaila is, why are the Tamidim telling them this? Why are they interrupting the story? What's the concern here? I think we normally understand that they are ever alert on their rabbi's behalf, and that's what Tamidim are for, and they want to make sure that they're, you know, Man Kriya Shema Shel Shacharis already, but one doesn't wish to. But one doesn't wish to what? One doesn't wish to miss the mitzvah? The morning Kriyat Shema can be said for the first 3 hours of the day. One doesn't need to tell them as a matter of urgency that the time for the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema has just arrived. If anything, if it's still 3 hours later and they're still talking, that's the time to come in and say, Rabbi Seinu, the time for Kriyat Shema is almost gone. So, pardon us, but we felt that you would appreciate being interrupted just for a few moments. But you don't need to interrupt them as a matter of priority when the time has just arrived. That's a good shaila. And the answer, based on the Kedushas Levi, the Berditcher V'Rav, is really to ask the question, what is Seder night all about? We tell the story. Why do we tell the story? What are we looking to accomplish? And we're looking to re-experience and tap into that original Yetzias Mitzrayim experience. To what end? What for? The answer is, we are looking to re-leave Mitzrayim for the same goal that we originally left Mitzrayim. And that goal is stated openly in the Pasuk. Ani Hashem Elokeichem asher etzeis etchem eretz Mitzrayim liyos lachem lelokim. The vector and the tachlist of leaving Mitzrayim is in order to become Hashem's people, to accept Hashem over us, liyos lachem lelokim. The mitzvah which represents liyos lachem lelokim is the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. It is known as Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shamayim. And therefore, we have a new insight, really, into what the Talmidim are doing here. Their rabbis have been, the whole night, re-experiencing Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Baalei HaMusar say something very interesting. They were Hayu Mesapren B'Yetzias Mitzrayim, Kol Oso Alayla, that whole night. Meaning, they got back to that night. Kol Oso Alayla. They were able to re-enter the original night of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But to leave Mitzrayim to do what? Liyos Lachem Lelokim. And therefore their Talmidim, ever alert, wanted to tell them as soon as possible that the mitzvah which represents the culmination and the realization of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim has just arrived. Higiyaz Man Kriya Shema Shel Shacharis, Liyos Lachem Lelokim. They wanted to tell the Rebbe's at the earliest possible opportunity, and that, I believe, is a fundamental note within the Haggadah. That's what we glean from the story. We'll leave it over there for this evening. Mitzvah Hashem.